Intervju Radija Študent. Pozdravljeni v današnjem intervjuju na Radiju Študent, v katerem se pogovarjamo s starim znancem slovenskih glasbenih odrov, vsestranskim džezovskim skladateljem, glasbenikom in še kaj, Kenom Vandermarkom. Nocoj številčno mednarodno zasedbo Resonance Ensemble nastopi v klubu Cankarjevega doma v okviru serialke Cankarjevi torki. Z njim se je v enem izmed ljubljanskih hotelov pogovarjal Vitje Raj. Prisluhnimo.
So welcome again to welcome on the air.
Yeah.
How do you do? Do you feel tired?
No, I feel okay. I mean, I get a lot of energy from the concerts and from the creative work, so there's a bit of a grind to the touring, you know, the late nights, early mornings, but there's a lot of activity that's exciting for me and that keeps me energized, so I don't feel that bad actually.
Just slightly speak up.
Oh, okay, slightly. Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so you will play in Ljubljana, you will play on the top of the skyscraper. And Slovenia is a country where your projects have always been accepted with arms open wide, so to speak. If you can recollect on some of the moments or something.
Oh, I mean, there's no question that Ljubljana has been a very important city for me as far as the different kinds of music I've done. I mean, it goes back like more than a decade, I think, at this point. The first time was with the Vandermark Five. And I owe a lot to Bogdan Benegar for all the concerts he's offered me to play here. And most recently I played with Eric Rivas, Jason Moran, and Nasheed Waits at the Ljubljana Jazz Festival this past summer, and that was incredible. And there's been tons of concerts in between with Powerhouse Sound, the Territory Band, the Ali Group. So yeah, maybe played in Ljubljana once a year for more than 10 years, so that's quite incredible for an American musician to get that opportunity. It's great.
Yeah. Also, one of your projects, which we will tour with Sonora this spring.
That's correct, yeah.
They debuted in Cerkno, haven't they?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think the first European tour, that's quite possible. I know that we played there. That was an amazing concert. That was totally incredible. Yeah, so I look forward to have more chances.
Yeah, also we shouldn't forget Giga Koritnik's photos.
Yeah, he's amazing. You know, we owe him a lot. I mean, the whole interaction with the music here, you know, the presenters, the audience, the photographers, everybody, it's like really extraordinary and vibrant. So coming back is always a pleasure.
So you were speaking about vibrance. You're coming with an ensemble that on a semantic level also recollects vibrance. This is Resonance Ensemble. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So Resonance Ensemble consists of musicians from both the North America and Scandinavia and Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. So besides telling a line or two about each of these other musicians, what can you tell us about the Resonance Ensemble and why was it named as such?
The project came together partially on the instigation of Mark Winiarski, who runs the Not Too record label, and he was here a couple summers ago at the Jazz Festival as well, talking about what it's like to run an independent label. And the idea was that I've been going to Poland a lot, playing with a lot of my smaller groups, and the thought of working with musicians from that area, whether Poland or Eastern Europe, would be a good idea, and maybe organize a new large band, since the Territory Band had stopped working. And just because of financial reasons, not because of creative reasons. And the idea was to, work with Polish musicians, and then work with musicians that I hadn't dealt with so much, like Steve Swell. I'd never played with him before. And I wanted to have a group that had a really strong brass section, so Magnus Brew and Beryl Homelander, who I'd worked with, seemed like a good idea and has been. I wanted to have some musicians from Chicago who knew me well, because I was actually writing pieces for people who I had never met before, and I wanted to make sure that there were members of the group who could explain the material to people who didn't know anything about how I worked. So I asked Tim Daisy and Michael Zerain, David Rempis, to join the band. And then from Poland, Mikolaj Czaska, and now Vaclav Zimpel are in the group, and the bassist Mark Tokar, who's from the Ukraine, he's from Kiev right now. So it's kind of a real mix of people and languages and sensibilities, and it's a very interesting and constructive challenge, a creative challenge, to try to bring it all together. And we've been working now for 5 years. We've got a number of records out. We have a brand new record out for this tour called What Country Is This? And I don't know, I mean, I really enjoy it because it's a way of organizing compositions that's very fluid, and to do that with a large group is, I think, a bit unique. So every night we can perform in a totally different kind of way, using material we know, but reassembling it in different sequences. So there's always different soloists on different parts, a different flow of the pieces and whatnot. So for me, it's a very exciting solution to the problem of trying to run a large band and also work without very much rehearsal time, which is always happening to us. So this will be the third concert on the tour tonight.
Mm-hmm. Great. So besides What Country Is This, the previous album was Kafka in Flight.
Correct.
And just speaking from the title, the people who follow your creative work know that you've been also referencing a lot in the parentheses.
Mm, yes.
So, which are there any particular artists in this time about Resonance Ensemble, if you can recollect, of course?
Yeah. No, for the new record, Polish poet Milosz is he's one of the pieces that's dedicated to him. That's a composition called Fabric Monument. And part of the finances that came to bring that group together in Chicago in March of last year, exactly a year ago, came from a Polish institute connected to celebrating the centenary of Milosz's birth. So that was part of the project. One of the pieces is dedicated to another Polish artist I like very much, Lutosławski. And he's one of my favorite composers. And that composition is called Acoustic Fence. And then the last piece is dedicated to Fred Anderson, a musician from Chicago who passed away in the last couple of years, who had a really generous spirit. And with these older, artists from Poland, I thought associating Fred with that, he was really from the same cloth, you know, same attitude, incredibly creative. And that piece is called Open Window Theory. So, yeah, I've continued to do that, you know, acknowledge influences and inspirations. I think it's a nice way to let people know where my thinking is, even if it's not directly connected to music, but how other kinds of creative thought change the way I perceive things and hopefully inspire me, and definitely inspire me, yeah.
Okay, so our listeners might not believe, but this it is almost as if this answer has declared the next questions I'm going to ask. I'm asking about how much do you know about Polish jazz, etc.
I mean,
since the Poles are the great part of American dream.
Oh, I see. Already? Well, speaking for myself, I'd have to admit that my knowledge of Poland and the creative work there was very, very slight before coming to Poland. And even now, there's so much that I don't know anything about. I mean, there's an incredible history of literature there, prose and poetry, great composers. I'm a fan of the earlier, the 60s period, early 70s period of the Polish, really, maybe more avant-garde jazz is really incredible. And then the newer players, you know, both Mikolaj and Vaclav, I think, are exceptional. You know, they're incredible musicians. And there's more and more players coming up in Poland that are really exciting and have their own personality and seem devoted to trying to find their own voice, you know, like any great musician would do. So my introduction to all that really has been through the music, you know, playing music there and being introduced to people there. And that's been true everywhere. I mean, you know, going to Ethiopia a couple of years ago, that was my introduction really to that culture, even though I had listened to the music a bit. But being there and being around the people, around the music directly, it's had much more impact, you know. So the traveling that happens because of being a musician and playing this music and having people who are curious about it and will invite me and the people I work with, it's been an extraordinary transformation of myself as a person, as a human being. So it's a learning experience always, and definitely in connection to your question about Polish impact. I mean, Chicago has a massive Polish population, and That was a big reason why we wanted to have the festival there in March of last year, the Resonance Festival, to bring some of the stuff that was happening, the Polish record labels, the musicians, bring them to Chicago, and there was an incredible reception there from the community. It was great.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, you were also mentioning Fred Anderson, now that since his departure, rest in peace, Mr. Anderson. He's also been a very important link to, particularly to the AACM, entire legacy of this movement, cultural movement of the Afro-Americans. So now that he's gone, is this link still, I mean, in is this still link with your party, with musicians, because Chicago and the city, the scenes, I don't know, and I guess.
Well, I mean, Fred was definitely there at the beginning for the AACM, really one of the early members. And when he passed away, it was a profound loss of that, like a profound loss for that history, but also just the history of creative music in Chicago in a broad sense. The AACM is still active, still doing things. And things have been, you know, I have to give Fred, you know, not just credit as an artist, but running the Velvet Lounge for all those years. He created a place that was open for everybody, all kinds of musicians, from the north side, from the south side, with different kinds of aesthetics, all kinds of things. And I think that his example of being open to just creative work and supporting it really indicated, you know, a better way to think about things that was less segregated than Chicago had been. When I first moved there in the late 80s and early 90s, it was really divisive between, you know, what was happening in the AACM and on the north side. But I think now things have opened up a lot, and I think Fred really deserves a lot of credit for that, by creating a place in the Velvet Lounge that was just free for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that you've been touring, et cetera, et cetera, I mean, could you, and that you've left almost 200 records behind. haven't you?
I don't know.
Who counts?
It's a lot. We'll just agree.
Your discographer and historian will obviously have a lot of work to do.
They'll be busy. Yeah.
And I mean, what is your personal ethics on a day-to-day basis? How do you manage? I mean,
The simple fact is, I love what I do. I mean, I it's not like the goal. There isn't a goal to create a certain number of albums or have a certain number of concerts. The goal is really to pursue what seems interesting to do. And there's a lot of amazing people I want to work with, people I've never played with before, people I've been working with for years, and I want to sustain those projects. And basically, with any kind of project that I think is exciting for me, I try to document that work about once a year. So for groups that lasted a long time, like the Vandermark Five, you know, that group was together for about 16 years, I think. And, you know, we had about a dozen records because of that. Not because I was just trying to make records, but every year there's a lot of projects doing things. And so it ends up being, I don't know, 5-6 records a year. Mm-hmm. But the goal really is to do good work. And I feel like it's kind of an organic process. And if you're devoted and passionate about what you do, there ends up being documents of that, you know, and it's I'm excited by it still. So as long as that happens, I'll be out here playing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next question would be about the times they are changing. The subtext of the question could be, I mean, in a way, it's been less than a week that the politicians in the states have tried to test the First Amendment, so to speak, and and it is only waiting for a sign from a person, from the president. And so, I mean, concerning the entire legacy of the music you've been involved with and that you are making, do you see that this that putting this into question could affect what you do?
Of course, politics affect what gets made, you know, the parameters with which you can work. I mean, the United States has never been really truly devoted to the arts. I mean, it's tokenistic, maybe money here and there. But more and more, as I travel, the community I belong to is the community of creative and open-minded thinkers, and that's political. people doing their own thing, making individual statements, whether through music or photography or painting or whatever. These are people I associate with and work with, and they're the ones who inspire me to continue on my own path. And I think over and over again you see the political situation swinging to the left or swinging to the right, and we're in a period now, unfortunately, that things have swung really far to the right all over the globe. And it's frightening. I mean, things are becoming, it's not just difficult like, oh, the funding isn't there for the arts. That's a minor problem. I mean, real artists are going to find ways to make what they do. They may have to change the parameters with when they can work or how big the projects can be or whatnot. But, you know, real artists are going to continue to create things. The scarier thing is what it does to human rights on a broad sense. And, you know, I think that the best thing I can do is not politicize my work overtly and become didactic about it, but continue to actually do the work that I believe in as an individual and let that speak for itself, because it really comes down to individuals. You know, it's whether you have a left-wing kind of thing or right-wing kind of thing, if it's just a mob mentality, no one's considering what's going on, no one's thinking about it and making their own choices. And that's the essential thing. I mean, if you want to have a democracy, a real democracy, that means the individual is responsible to be informed and make their own choices. And so I feel that whether it's me or somebody else in the group tonight or whatever, any artist, if they remain true to their individualism, that's an example that for some other people they might see and perceive the fact that, well, it exists. You know, it's not just something in a book. It's like people are thinking for themselves, and for me that's a political action. And so I'd rather do that and in interviews talk about politics, but on the bandstand or through the music, not do sloganistic type things. I feel like that's a waste of what I can really do better. Mm-hmm. But I agree, it's a scary time, and I think that people need to be really thinking about their choices and who they're electing into office, because it impacts everybody. Things are so globally tied together now that the choices made in the U.S. or the choices made in France or the choices made in Japan, wherever, are affecting everybody else. So, you know, we're kind of all in this together, whether people want to believe it or not. It's we're in it together, so we should really start choosing for the people. You know, and that means individuals, you know. But I should go because I have to be at my sound check in 15 minutes. Okay. So one more question.
Yeah. Okay. So the I'm fine. The next stop you will go is you will go to the Brazil, which will kind of open for you in a certain way. Mm. It's already a territory that's been, I don't know, investigated by some of your peers from Chicago. Mm-hmm. So it's like an opening. On the other hand, in Croatia, we are missing you a lot. When is the next time that you're going to come drop by?
Well, I mean, it sounds kind of simplistic, but the truth is I got invited to Brazil, so that's why I'm going. I'd love to come back to Croatia. I mean, I've loved playing there. I miss Zagreb, and it always comes down to, you know, being invited and there being enough finances to get us there. I mean, it costs money to travel there, you know, to Zagreb or any place in Croatia. And the reason we're in Ljubljana is that there was a programming here, and like I said before, with Bogdan Benegar, he's been unbelievably supportive of the kind of work I've been doing over the years. And without that just basic financial support, there's no way we could have gotten the bus here from Vienna and then from tomorrow to go up to Krakow, you know? So there's a basic, fundamental, like, you know, pay the bills aspect to doing music and art. But the biggest thing, too, is, like, getting invited and finding a way to do it, you know? So I'm excited about going back to Brazil, but I'd be just as excited to go to Croatia again, you know, really, in all honesty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And enjoy your tour.
I am already.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you, Ken, for dropping by.
Yeah, thanks.
S Kenom van der Barkom se je pred njegovim nocojšnjim nastopom za sedbo Resonance Ensemble v klubu Cankarjevega doma pogovarjal Vid Jeraj. Intervju Radija Študent.